policy. Policy, the people's the place for civil policy in the Beehive State. Policy.
Welcome to Civolicy and the Beehive. We're back again. My name is Alexander Castanio, and next to me is...
My name is Mike Crabtree. We're really happy to join you guys today.
Yeah, and congratulations, Mike. We're on episode 10.
Wow, 10 episodes.
Yeah,
I know. That's impressive.
That's 10 episodes, we're actually doing something.
It's something that, you know, most people wouldn't bother to do, I feel like... That makes us successful in that point, you know.
Yeah,
they say 80% of success is showing up.
No, that's true.
And you know, I feel that's true. Like not 100% of the time, but maybe like 80%.
But it's a huge percentage, and I mean, super is easy to give up, and yeah, it keeps us relevant and kind of us constantly on the loop or in the loop, and you know, knowing what's going on and what we're working on and what's going on. In Utah and all
right.
That stuff. All right, so got some good stuff to talk about. We just got done with July 4th Independence Day. That was
yep.
Fun, tiring.
That was fun. It was so hot outside.
It was crazy hot, and yeah, I was in the Sandy Parade.
Yeah.
For the candidate, and Mike, thank you for helping me.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably why it was so hot. I was outside all day. I'm sure it's probably been that hot all this week, but I haven't noticed.
So. Yeah. No, it was crazy, crazy hot. And, there was, in front of us, there was the Chick-fil-A car float. And there was a person in, the cow costume, that super thick costume. I'm sure that they died in there because it was so hot. Oh, man. Cool. Well, yeah, you can find us again at civolicy.org. You can email us at info@civolicy.org. And, there's a donate button there, so make sure to press that. And you can donate $5, $10, or more. Really, everything helps, again. Helps us to keep going and to get research done and to... bring the power back to the people and to be a lobbyist for the people. So let's start off with
let's just end the show and
we're done. No.
thank you for joining us.
Thanks. Okay, no. So
fine.
I guess we should talk about something.
Yes, we can talk about things.
On Utah policy, they just came out with a article, I think it was yesterday, and it's something that's people are finally starting to acknowledge. It's something I've been talking about for a long time, and I have seen this issue come, and we've talked about it before, so housing prices and how they've gone up rapidly. And how it's just completely insane and unaffordable. So Utah policy came out, July 9th. I'll just read it here. So they said that general rule of thumb used to determine if you can afford to buy a house is if the price is roughly equivalent to 2.6 years of your household income.
Wait, so you're supposed to be able to pay off the house if you save every cent for 2.5 years?
No, so it's basically what you make in 2.6 years is how much is what you can afford. So let's say you make $50,000 a year.
Okay.
Then, 50,000 times 2.6 would be, you're the math guy.
That's, just under $150,000, so.
Right, yeah, so it'd be right around there would be your maximum is what you should stay within.
Okay.
Makes sense. Because then you're able to, pay for your house comfortably while being able to live and pay for everything else. Yeah. So, a new study that came out that average house pricing in Salt Lake City takes 4.5 years of income to afford, which is insane. We're actually the 20th least affordable places in the United States. It's crazy. Sorry, I got my dog in the back wanting to get his toy.
No, that is crazy. Yeah. And this is definitely something we have talked about as far as rising house prices. But the reason we talk about it so often is because it's such a prevalent problem. And it's a problem that's just getting worse and worse. Mm. And, you know, we talk also a lot about how there's a lot of businesses and a lot of industries moving into Utah, mm-hmm. which is good and bad. You know, it's a double-edged sword. Obviously, yeah, we like having jobs here in Utah, but the problem is the jobs that are coming into Utah aren't really geared towards Utahns specifically. Right. There are probably people in Utah, but more often than not, it's people around the country that specialize in a certain field, and then they move into Utah. Right. And because they're all moving into Utah, that's causing housing prices.
Right, and those are the good jobs that actually pay well. So these jobs are coming in that already are filled by you know, people that are just moving here and making the good money.
Right.
But then, yeah, they say they bring in jobs. And I've said this again before. It's like, yeah, they do for Utahns, but they're paying crap, like $10 an hour, $15 an hour. So it's not livable at all. And it's just, you just can't live on that. You'd have to have like three or four of those jobs to even make it. So, let me read off the top 20. So, the least affordable is Los Angeles, and that's 9.6. I'm sure that's no surprise to anyone. Then San Jose, San Francisco, San Diego, Honolulu, Ventura, California, Sacramento, Stockton, California, Riverside. So right now we're in like the 5.9 range, which is not too far from us. Riverside, Portland, Seattle, New York is at 5.4, so yeah, that's insane. Actually,
right.
I didn't really connect until now.
Yeah,
between Salt Lake City and Portland is like 1%.
Wow.
Or like 1 point off.
Right.
1 year off. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
So might as well go move to New York.
No kidding. I mean, and those are not cheap places to live.
No.
Portland, like, New York.
Yeah.
I mean,
and this is New York City.
Right.
I'm not talking about New York State in the middle of nowhere. New York City. The Big Apple. And then Fresno, California, Denver, Boston, Miami, Sarasota, Stamford, Las Vegas, and then Salt Lake City. So that's crazy.
No, that is.
That's
That's wild. And, you know, it really kind of comes down to, you can't help but ask yourself, you know, like, are the policymakers in Utah aware of this? And if they are, do they really care?
They don't care.
No. I mean, they have to be aware of it. I mean, the statistics are out there plain as day. I mean, you do a 10-second Google search, you can find it.
And they're aware, but not only that, they're the ones that made it this way because they're the ones that made policies that make it so good for businesses, for apartment complexes, for housing builders, stuff like that, to come in and build super cheap on cheap land, buy the property cheap from, you know, the government or whatever, and then turn it around and just gouge the price on the people. Yeah. And so the lawmakers know, but they don't give a crap. And they won't, because they already have a house and everything. It's not their problem. So again, it's just another proof that they don't care about the people. It's only about their self-interest. And a lot of them, too, have interests in like the housing market or land development and stuff, just like Greg Hughes and the Inland Port thing, which we'll talk about a little bit. But it's all the same stuff. They all have interests, and they're making money off of it, and they could care less about the people, about families. They say they're so, you know, family-based, but yeah. That's a total lie, because family-based means making it affordable for families to live here. Me and you and the rest of our generation and anyone else that would like to live in Utah or grew up in Utah will have to move out.
Right.
There's no way we can live here.
You know, I wonder, too, if, you know, because I hear a lot about this as far as, you know, a lot of stimulating for job growth in, like, construction, mm-hmm. you know, for housing. And you kind of mentioned, you know, building housing and stuff. And a lot of people like to reference, you know, the stock market crash in 2008, where the housing market just completely plummeted. And a lot of those people, you know, contractors, whatnot, they were out of work. And so they kind of justify this overbuilding, overpopulating of housing in Utah, sort of to justify really this huge influx, you know, of building. And, you know, last I checked, you know, 2008, that was 10 years ago. And so it's funny, too, because, you know, I hear this excuse being made all the time. And of course, you know, the crash of 2008, I mean, that was a serious thing. You know, I had a lot of family members that ended up being out of work because of it. But still, I'm just kind of curious, you know, like if that's like one of their excuses or one of their justifications for doing this.
Yeah. And it can't last forever the way it's going. I mean, it's, yeah, there's just no restriction and again, it falls into everything, not just housing, but renting. So if you can't afford a house, which is most people, then you would rent. But rent is so expensive. It's like $1,000 for a one-bedroom apartment. That's insane. And this isn't even in Salt Lake. Salt Lake, it's even more. I'm talking about Sandy or Draper or even West Valley and stuff. It's that much just for like the basic...
Yeah.
Place, which again, no one can afford either. It's so much money.
Right.
So, again, it's something that the lawmakers just don't care about. And they're making money off of it because, they get, you know, it's cheap for the big apartment companies to come in and build, and, you know, they'll get a profit of it. And they even get donations like my competitor right now. Which is Kurt Colemore. I have nothing against him. Go look at his public contributions for his campaign. And he's already gotten, I think, a couple $1,000s from like the apartment, bureau or whatever. So it's like, what do you think is going to happen if he gets elected? We're going to have more apartments. And I've talked to a lot of people on there, like, they hate having all these apartments here, and I get it, too, you know, just having such a mix, and there's, you know, the right places for apartments and not, but, you know, we've kind of, a lot of places have sold themselves to the highest bidder or whatever, and so we're seeing all these apartments come in, and what do you think will happen if he gets elected? We'll get more and more apartments, because guess who donated thousands of dollars? So it's just, again, it's just right there, it's just in your face, where these politicians are getting bought off or candidates, and you know, where you really have to decide, like, what do you want? How do you want your future to be? And yeah, it's all important decisions.
Right. No, it is. It is important stuff, and you know, that's the reason we're trying to spread the word that people need to be more educated and they need to do their research, because it really comes down, you know, the power is with us, and in order to fight these things that we feel are unfair in our state government, really comes down, the responsibility is in our hands and who we vote for.
Exactly. All right, so talk a little bit about, well, we mentioned Greg Hughes, so
yeah.
I think since we last talked, he resigned from the board.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, wow. Because of all the pressure, which actually came from the United Utah Party,
right.
Initially really calling him out, saying, hey, you're a piece of crap. Like, well, to be honest, yeah.
I'm sure it was more eloquent.
Yeah, it was much more eloquent, but like you're just completely abusing your power, just slapping the people of Utah in the face, saying I can do whatever I want. And you know, he tried to play it off, but it's just so true. It's complete corruption. And yeah, I'm glad he's gone. And he's done.
Do you know who's going to be replacing him?
Someone, I don't remember, but someone else will.
Somebody else.
Yeah, somebody else. That's not him.
Somebody that's not Greg Hughes. Yeah. Okay.
So I'm just glad that people are, you know, waking up more and seeing what these legislators are doing, and that they don't care. They'll be, you know, do it right in front of us without even trying to hide a thing. With their corruption and yeah, if we don't say anything, then they'll just keep doing it.
Right.
So yeah, I'm glad that's, we were able to change that. And yeah, so I had a fundraiser this last Saturday. It went pretty well, for my Senate campaign. If you don't know, I'm running for Senate District 9, that's in Sandy. And, yeah, it went well. Had a lot of neighbors come out. And we talked a bunch and got grilled on questions, which were fine. Loved talking and stuff. And yeah, a lot of the same issues come up, which I suspected, which were, you know, like the future of Utah, of the, you know, our population growth and how that's going to work and where housing should go and prices of housing plus transportation, you know, all the good stuff we've talked about. Also air quality, how to deal with that with all the people, and then with like local school districts and public education, what we need to do with that. I think we've talked about that too.
And that's definitely one we could go on about.
yeah and that one, and it's the same consensus with everyone, so I think we've all a lot of people are just tired of how it's been, where they keep raising money. They're like, oh, it's for the children.
And they keep opening new districts.
Right, exactly, yeah. So, yeah, they keep, you know, raising millions and millions of dollars, like way more than enough for what we need. But it doesn't go to the children at all. It goes to the administration or making new, you know, six-figure positions, which is insane. So we need to get in there and just completely get rid of that. Get rid of tons of administration positions, tons of people that are making over $100,000 for no reason. Right. That job shouldn't exist at all.
Yeah, I see the need for administration, not see the need for this much administration.
Yeah, for just the overkill.
It is overkill. Yeah. And, you know, they keep on opening up new districts for every, all the time. I mean, I remember going to school when they split Jordan District into Canyons and Jordan, and that was like such a huge deal. But now they're opening them all the time, and it like barely makes the news. And it's like people are just so used to it.
Yeah, and each new district means new administration, and the administration makes a lot of money. It's not some part time. It's like they're making, you know, over $100,000 or more. A lot more. No,
they are. They're making way more than teachers. That's for
sure. Yeah. And then we have the teacher problem, which is, you know, they're not getting paid enough.
Nobody wants to be a teacher.
Yeah, nobody wants to be a teacher because, you know, they don't get paid anything. They have to spend a lot of money out of pocket, which they already don't have. There's just a huge turnover rate because it's just so stressful that they're like, forget it, I'll do something else. And I don't blame them. It's like, if it's crappy, I mean, you can want to do the best to help the future out, but if no one's helping you out, you're like, forget it. I mean, you can't live.
Yeah.
So that money needs to go to teachers.
Right. Yeah. No, being a teacher definitely is not a livable income if it's your sole source of income. And, you know, here in Utah, we have kind of a special culture, I guess you could say. A lot of it comes from Mormonism as far as, you know, this idea of, you know, the platonic family of the man and the woman. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that influences a lot of women, LDS women, to go into teaching, which, you know, that stays the tides a little bit, but still it doesn't do much, you know. I mean, look at the rest of the country, and that's exactly where Utah is going to end up being headed. Mm-hmm. It's where we're going to be heading. It's sad, you know, because obviously, you know, there is passion in teaching, you know, some people enjoy it, but even if you have a passion in something, still you have to look at it practically. Mm-hmm. And I think most people are going to look at teaching practically and say, you know, I can't really afford to live on this.
Yeah.
We're going to run out of teachers, and that's terrible.
Yeah, exactly. And I got the question too, like, oh, well, you know, how are we going to make sure we get the best teachers? I'm like, that's a problem that'll solve itself.
How are we going to get teachers, period? That's what we should be asking.
because right now what's happening is that we don't have enough teachers. Actually, we're already kind of to that point where we've run out. And so they're kind of hiring people, whoever is willing to, so they don't have the actual proper, you know, education to teach. Like, they didn't actually get a degree. They're just whoever.
Right.
So, yeah, of course you're not going to get a good education because they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Basically, if we start, you know, paying the teachers very well, treating them a lot better and stuff, getting rid of all this administration stuff and letting the teachers teach, then they'll stay. And then, you know, the best will come out of the fold, because, you know, and then the school, you know, actual schools can take care of that, and we'll obviously know what teachers are good and bad. And there'll always be, you know, really good people wanting to be teachers. So you always have the best. You know, you don't have, I mean, you don't go to Burger King and see that, you know, you have the best of the best because they don't pay you well. It's just a whatever job. That's basically how teaching is, because they don't care about you. But if you go into a position where the job really cares about you, you're going to have the best of the best, because people want to be there, and people don't leave very often because they like it. They enjoy their time.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, part of human nature and just, yeah, how things work.
Yeah, and it's kind of a perpetuating issue too, because, I mean, you know, we talk about wanting to make a livable wage. We've talked about that a lot. And I know a lot of people that go into education, public education, that they want to make a livable wage. And the only way to do that is to get into an administration position.
Right.
And so many people are going after these administration positions that they have to keep making up administration positions. And it's like, why do we do this? It's like, why can't we just pay the teachers the amount that, I mean, at least, you know, more? I mean, ideally, the amount administrators make, but I mean, you know, that may or may not be a pipe dream, but definitely, like, why can't we pay them more? So when people become teachers, they're not immediately looking to, okay, I want to stop teaching so I can make real money and be administrator. Yeah. And it's just, and then we're stuck with all these administrators that I don't know what they do.
They don't do anything.
Nobody knows what they do. They go to meetings. I'm not sure.
That's about it how they can make more administration jobs.
They go to meetings. Yep. They meet about meetings.
Yeah. No, that's true. And it's even true on a higher education level too. It's kind of something we talked about a little bit, that it's, you know, way too much money in administration, not enough going to teachers. So you get all of these adjunct professors and stuff, not making very much or getting no benefits.
Yeah.
Full-time professors aren't getting enough, while administration is making tons of money. So is the sports team and everything, which is just insane. And their needs, and I truly believe there needs to be responsibility on the universities. And I got a little pushback on that. You know, because I said, you know, one of my plans would be like, well, there should be a link between, you know, your degree and then how much you get paid after, like, not making some ridiculous amount for a degree, but then you can't even get paid that much.
Yeah.
But, you know, the school expects you to pay them no matter what.
Right.
But they're the ones pushing it out and stuff. So, no, I think there should be a cut. And if that cuts the university, good, it should. Because they're not, don't be pushing things that, either people don't need or that are just so expensive, and again, all this kind of comes down to profiting on our future, which I think has happened, is the older generations and the people in power have borrowed, have taken all of our money and opportunities from us, so they can just live in the huge piles of money now, and then when they die, it doesn't matter, because then it's, you know, then it's not their problem anymore, but we're the ones here suffering. So they're the ones that took, you know, taking all the money from the future. We won't see any Social Security. We won't see, you know, we're the ones that have to pay these huge housing costs. We're the ones that have to pay these huge tuition costs. What else? It could just go on and on. We're the ones that have to wait an extra 20, 30 years because no one will retire. And so we can never move up into actual management positions.
Right,
it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, that's hard. And I think I know we've talked a lot about the us versus them as far as the older generation versus millennials. And you know, I have received pushback from people about that. Surprisingly, a lot from millennials, actually. They like to, for some reason, some millennials are self-hating and they like to think that they are entitled.
But they're the ones that have no idea.
I grant that some millennials are entitled, but I really don't feel comfortable just putting a blanket statement that all millennials are entitled or all baby boomers are entitled. You know what I mean? It's hard to do that, but I go by trends, and the trend I see with a lot of millennials is that a lot of them work really hard. A lot of them are really being handed a crap deal. Yeah. And, you know, same thing with Gen Xers. We talked about how Gen Xers are even more screwed than millennials because, you know, it's true that in 30 years, we're going to have to wait 30 years for promotions because a lot of the older people in jobs and in companies, they're just not retiring. They don't want to, or they're not able to. I don't know why. They won't retire.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. And yeah, it's a problem that has reached into everything, and it'll keep affecting us year by year.
Yeah.
So yeah, continuing on, the fundraiser went really well, and got some questions. It's interesting too, because sometimes I'll get questions on national issues.
Okay.
Even like, oh, what are you gonna do about Social Security? I'm like, that's a federal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well,
I will do everything about Social Security.
And or just some other federal things or things in immigration and stuff. I'm like, look, I care about those things too, but my time and energy is not put on it because I'm not a federal candidate. And you know, I plan on being. I am like just straightforward, and I'm gonna tell you how it is and what I know. I will really let you know how I view them and how I came to a conclusion. But I'm not gonna make up some thing for an item that's popular in the news that you know everyone has a question on. Because guess what? Everyone has an opinion. And they're all worthless. Sorry.
Most but of everyone, them are worthless.
Just
yes.
About all of them. Well, actually, no, they're all worthless until you act on it. If you don't act.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Everyone has an opinion, and who cares? Like, I don't care about your opinion and don't care about my opinion. It doesn't matter. It matters when that person acts on it. Then it does matter because they're showing that they're going to do something about it. So that's how I am. When I do have a real opinion on something, it's because I'm working on it. I am going to make a change, and I have a plan to make things work. So that comes to, you know, the future of Utah and transportation, all the things we've talked to. I have a plan. I have ways of figuring out the solutions for it, because that's what I know in my power I can do. I can change. Federal stuff, you know, I'll straight up tell you, I don't know. There's some things I have no idea. And if I got to that, you know, to a federal position, then I would, of course, study it and work on those. But for now, like, I'm not going to lie.
You want to focus on state issues.
Right, yeah. And I'm not going to, you know, politician or person that has an answer for everything, they're straight up lying to you. I'll tell you that right now, that they have some solution for everything, for any question you come up with, you know, which they just about all do, they're lying. They're just trying to save their face. And I'm not going to do that. If there's some federal issue you ask me about, I'll say, hey, I don't know. And honestly, I'm not looking into it because there's nothing I can do about it right now. Not that I don't care about it, but there's other things that are very important, but I can do something about it. I can actually change. I think that makes a really big difference.
Yeah.
I think that's something people would like to really see, too, in our lawmakers. Them actually, you know, just being honest. Just be right. Like, you know what, yeah, in these things I can do something, so we're going to, you know, fight it out or make policy. Other things, you know, there's nothing we can do. So, yeah, that's where it's at.
Cool.
I think that people can respect that. And, you know, it's transparency. It's just being open and showing what's important and that I mean business. I'm not here just to have the title of senator.
Right.
No, it's like, no, I'm gonna get some stuff done.
Cool. I believe you. And I found an interesting article, if you don't mind if I share it. It kind of goes back into what you were talking about. You were talking about federal versus state issues, and here is a pretty big Utah state issue. This is one that was, okay, this is an article from the Salt Lake Tribune, and it was released yesterday. And I want to kind of go over, you know, everybody's first knee-jerk reactions and some of the facts, and then just kind of elaborate on it. Okay, so the title of the article is New Data Shows That Utah Judges Are Often Spending Less Than 3 Minutes Viewing Warrants Before Approving Them. And so it talks about how in 2016, the average time was 10 minutes, and that has been narrowed down to 3 minutes. And so, I mean, obviously, first knee-jerk reaction is that this is wrong. And that's a good knee-jerk reaction, because it is wrong. And then later it talks about, though...
Like it's wrong, meaning that they spend more time, or that it's wrong that they're spending only 3 minutes on it.
That they spend only 3 minutes on it. And that's what a lot of people are saying. And there's a lot of backlash about it. But, you know, the reduction in time is somewhat justified because they've come up with a new system. They call them like e-warrants, which is pretty much what it sounds like. It's basically so you can, put in a request for a warrant like on an online system or whatever, and then a judge who's on call, he can approve it. So it kind of streamlines getting warrants. So I mean, that's fine. You know, I'm okay with that. You know, and I'm okay with.
I'm not sure if I'm okay with that though, because it's then they're getting. Is it right for them to be getting so many warrants?
Well, like, so what I'm saying is I'm okay with the e-warrant system. Uh-huh. So I'm okay with them asking for warrants online.
Right.
What I'm not okay with is judges approving them after just looking at them for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, so warrants, they come down to our Fourth Amendment right, which is really that we should be protected from unlawful searches and seizures unless there's probable cause. And so those, you know, any type of search or any type of blood draw, whatever they need.
Even looking in your phone.
Yeah, looking through your phone, you have to have a search warrant to do.
Or your car, too.
That's to protect us. That's to protect our freedom. You know, it's to keep us from living in a police state. And the fact that judges are only spending 3 minutes looking at this, that's frightening. Because I mean, it's like, what if you know, a police officer just, you know, for whatever reason became power hungry and just decided to just write a warrant just because he wants to look in your house or whatever, just because he can. And then the judge, he doesn't even like read the reasoning, you know, because he only spends 3 minutes on it. And then that cop, he can legally go into your house and search your stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's terrifying to me.
No, it is.
You know? I mean,
yeah,
that's horrifying.
It's completely terrifying, horrible. And also, a big problem with that is that police stuff like that, I've seen has turned into too much of like standard, like basically like you're just going to work for the day from, you know, 9 to 5, and you go and do your same stuff. And that's how the judges are treating this. and how cops are treating this and other issues.
Yeah.
Like speeding tickets, stuff like that. It's just like business as normal, which is completely wrong. Completely wrong. That the government, that type of anything that has to do with your freedom or of your guilt and stuff should never be turned into just a routine thing, which it has become.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely insane. And a huge reform that needs to happen. Because, like, yeah, like, sworn stuff, it doesn't surprise me, unfortunately, because I've been to court a couple times. One was for, I think we talked about it, it's an apartment complex for some stuff.
Yeah, for parking, yeah.
And then I went to court for a traffic ticket because they gave me a ticket for going 10 over in a 25, but the actual address that they marked on the ticket was in a 30 miles an hour, so it would have been 5. And on both occasions, the judge spent like a minute or so on they were just like rushing through it because there were so many people there through everyone's case. They just rushed through it. The judge was very, I don't even know if unfair, just wanted to go home.
Just didn't care. Day. It was like, this is standard case, don't care.
Yeah, and she just wanted to, and it was, it wasn't even a male judge, it was a female judge at both times, and she just wanted to get through it as fast as possible to go home, which is insane.
Yeah.
You do that if you're working in some office job, putting in numbers, not freaking determining someone's guilt or innocence.
Yeah.
Which was insane. Yeah, the first time I went for the apartment thing, I basically, I was the one suing and stuff, and the, big corporation apartment place was doing a lot of stuff wrong, but they kept asking, the judge kept, was there any monetary damage to you? I'm like, what does it matter? There was some monetary damage, but there's a lot more, and time taking the car away and just screwing over another 1,000 people or more that live in the apartment complex. Yeah. But she didn't even care. It was just done.
That's
and like yeah. over with. And they didn't even look into it or anything. I'm like, this is so messed up.
Yeah.
And then the traffic thing, even though the cop put, and I did everything because the law is the law. It's very just clear, there's no assuming, or at least you as a person can't assume, but apparently they can, because the address that was printed there, several times, was not the correct, was not within the 25 mile per hour area. So they were wrong. Just even on a technicality, apparently people can get off for murder for technicalities, but not for a speeding ticket.
Yeah.
So they said, we just assume the location. I'm like, what? What do you mean you just assume? So that was just freaking ridiculous again. So
yeah, that is ridiculous. I mean, what should have happened there is they should have, first of all, granted, obviously waived your ticket because, it wasn't in that
because
zone.
They were wrong.
And then go about repairing it, know, instead of being like, well, you should have known it was assumed,
They actually said that you should know.
What do you mean I should know?
Yeah, because
it's like, I only know what the sign says.
Exactly.
I only know what the zoning says.
And that's how the law works. It's everything's supposed to be very clear. Like basically if you're just completely stupid, you know,
I have common sense. I don't have ESP, Right. It's one of right. those things.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that in the law, common sense doesn't even apply either because it has to be so specific. And that's why even every wording in a court case and stuff can be so critical because of that, because it needs to be so specific and without a doubt, without able to interpreting it right. any other way.
Yeah,
That's how the law is.
That's how it should be.
That's how it should be, and that's how it's supposed to be, how it is in our Constitution. But in Sandy courts, it's not. They can just assume whatever they want.
Right.
So that's another huge problem that I'd want to work on, and I'm glad you brought it up because not just the warrants, but our judicial system, just overall, on a statewide So citywide to statewide is corrupt too.
There's and for any listeners who are still kind of on the fence about this, there's still some more parts in this article I want to read. It says, and I'm quoting directly, "It's rare, however, for a judge to turn down any officer. Only about 2% of the proposed warrants this year were denied." No, I'm sorry, that's in the past 2 years, according to state data. And, you know, obviously, I mean, you know, maybe the officers are just so good at writing warrants and so good at requesting them that the judge is just like, wow, this is perfect. I can't deny it. You know, you're just, you know, the law so well, but you know, something inside of me says that's not right.
That's not true.
That doesn't ring true. I mean, as great as police officers are, they're humans and they're capable of making mistakes.
And it's standard procedure again. They're like, okay, I've got 10 warrants today. And then they'd sign them off. Just like,
right.
You know, like, oh, I've got 10 orders to take, you know, 10 hamburgers to make. And I'm not kidding. Like, it sounds funny, but that's really how it's come down to you.
And, you know, it's funny, too, because when it comes to warrants, you know, obviously there's different levels of, like, complexity, you know. There are those simple, like, clear cut, you know, I need a warrant for this or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, it talks about in the article that, like, a lot of times those really simple, clear cut ones, the judges are able to, like, look at them for, like, a minute or less and then approve them. Yeah, you know, I grant that. But then, you know, in the same paragraph, they say there are the other, like, warrants that take multiple pages that they approve in the exact same amount of time. Like, and that, to me, that means they don't even read any of them.
No.
You know, they just kind of, like, stare at, like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of like when you're told that you have to read something and you don't, so you just kind of stare at it, you know what I mean?
They probably get the general idea. It's like, oh, this is about drugs. Okay.
Right. This is about something. Okay, approved. And so, I mean, it's scary because, you know, those judges, the reason the judges and the warrant system is there is to protect us, to protect people. And right now, you know, according to statistics, it doesn't appear they're doing that.
No.
It appears that they're basically just using it as kind of like an inconvenience step, you know, that it's I have to do this.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's just get it out of the way and do it, you know. And it's like, that's not the way it should be.
Let's get rid of this freedom real quick.
Right. I mean, it's like, oh, why do we have to do this? Okay, let's just get this over with, you know. It's kind of like, you know, jumping through the hoops, kind of. And it shouldn't be seen that way because, really, the warrant system exists to protect our rights and to protect our liberties. And if we don't have the warrant systems or people are just treating it like another hoop to jump through, then we don't have those liberties.
Yeah.
We don't have those freedoms. We don't have that protection. And that's scary.
Yeah, that's completely true. And basically, which I think is a huge problem, is that, like, on a city to state level, we don't the checks and balances system doesn't really happen at all, because, like, let's say for a traffic ticket, you go and you say you want to, you know, fight it. Okay, it's you by yourself unless you pay tons of money for an attorney, which you probably won't, and I'm sure they're betting on that. So it's you against the judge that works for the city, the police officer that works for the city, the attorney that works for the city, so all of, you know, very skilled people that have done this 1,000 times to do everything they can to make sure you, you know, regular citizen becomes a criminal, and so they can get their money, and they're brutal. They're brutal about it too, and so they're basically all a team where, you know, the police is you know, part of the executive branch. So they're the enforcers. And then the judicial, which is, you know, a separate branch and stuff. They're not supposed to be so buddy-buddy.
Right.
And, you know, and then the lawyers and all that stuff. So it becomes like this huge professional team against you.
Right, yeah.
So good freaking luck.
Yeah.
Which is horrible. Like, the system is not made for... This was never supposed to be like this. Like, we're not supposed to have the system of these huge legal professionals just destroying citizens and their innocence because they know the law so much better, and they can basically do whatever they want to you. And they basically have, you know, have a quota or or something of how many citizens are basically criminals in their eyes, just so they can make some more money or so they can get easier warrants or stuff like that. And it's not supposed to be that way at all. And I think our founding fathers would be horrified by how it's, what it's become, you know, even on a local level, because we're not free at all. And you have no representation, or you can't win.
Yeah. No, it is scary. Sorry, I'm listening to you, but I'm also kind of reading some of these examples. One of them, so it says, one warrant, for example, a Davis County judge spent just 26 seconds in October 2017 reviewing a 9-page affidavit before permitting an officer to search this massage parlor suspected of prostitution. A 9-page affidavit in 26 seconds. Wow, he must be the world's fastest reader. I can't help but laugh at these, but it's just like,
some of my teachers would have just read over my 9 pages in 26 seconds, yeah, and maybe I would have gotten more A's.
Yeah, maybe, you know, would have gotten, yeah, hopefully those. It's too bad those judges weren't some of my college professors. I mean,
it's just laziness and things becoming standard, where in this line of profession cannot be the case. And we've talked about this before for this type of stuff. Like if you want to be a police officer, if you want to be a judge and stuff, it's know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
And it's more than just a job. These public service is way more than, it's not a job. It's public service. You're serving the public, and you need to remember that every single day, every warrant, every paper you read through, means someone's innocence or guilt, or can affect their lives tremendously. You know, you're not working.
Yeah. And in a way, you're devoting your life to that higher purpose. You're not devoting your life to just making money.
Right.
You're devoting it to being a servant.
Right.
And to hopefully, you know, being a servant for good, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, yeah, police officers are servants for good. You know, they do help prevent
crime.
That's
their role, yeah.
That is their role. And it's just, unfortunately, like you said, it's become too monotonous and too much of a job, mm-hmm. that it's no longer about service. It's no longer about that greater purpose. It's just about, you know, kind of jumping through the hoops and making it to the next paycheck.
Yep. And you can't do that with people's lives and with people's innocence or guilt. So that's a huge, huge problem. I definitely would want to change. So, let's go into, I saw an interesting article on KSL about counterfeit money.
Okay.
So I just found this right before the show.
Nice.
So it says, two arrested in counterfeit currency scheme discovered in Cottonwood Heights. So, two people were arrested Monday after they were purchasing goods from businesses using counterfeit currency. And the name of the people was Clinton Curry and Helena Joyce Lucky. So not so lucky anymore.
I guess not. I don't know either of those people.
Yeah. So.
I thought I would, because, I mean, I know a lot of people who live in Cottonwood Heights, but
looks like they were from California.
Oh, so, okay. That makes sense. No, I'm just kidding. Bringing crime here.
Yeah.
No. Do you remember that story a couple years ago of somebody who was making counterfeit money, and then they were using it to buy Girl Scout cookies?
Like, I don't know if I heard about that.
Oh, that was one that, I think that one happened in Utah too. And so,
of course, that would happen.
Yeah, it's funny, you know. It's like most people make counterfeit money to get rich. This person did
or
it
buy
for,
drugs.
Yeah, this person did it for Girl Scout cookies. I mean, they're pretty good.
Girl Scout cookies, the Mormon crack.
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, it was pretty funny.
That is really funny. Yeah, I saw that. That was a fun thing to bring up. Also. Got my final project going on for school. It's my final class. I graduated, but I just have this final class. It's my prospectus, so it's like a huge research thing that I'll be done. So basically what I'm going to do, and I think it'll be really good for us in the future and for Utah, and it might get rid of a lot of bad legislators too, is that I'm going to do a huge project research on basically corruption in the legislature when it comes to
In the state legislature?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, when it comes to donations.
Legislature?
Legislature. So, yeah, so Utah law right now is any state candidates, campaign, so a state senator, state representative, yeah, any statewide race, you can donate, or anyone, any company, any PAC, any organization, any political organization can donate as much as they want to that campaign, which is crazy. So, and makes it super unfair for people actually want to do good. So let's say, you know, there's some Republican.
Well, it makes it unfair for people who don't have money. You
right,
know,
exactly,
really.
Which is a lot of people. Yeah, so if you have tons of money, and that's what we have right now, is a lot of legislators that have tons of money. So, yeah they could support their campaign, plus getting thousands of dollars from out-of-state interests. It's, like, crazy to see how many out-of-state companies and stuff are paying into these state legislative roles where it's like they have nothing to do with it, but
and
then
they end up making policy that helps people
exactly.
with money.
And exactly.
it's just
yeah.
it's a never-ending cycle,
right? So that's my project, is basically finding, and it's not too hard, finding the connections of who or what big corporations and whatever have donated to candidates, and then seeing if those, and then once those candidates became legislators, usually the same organizations will continue contributing, and then connecting if they passed or made laws that had anything to do with benefiting that organization, which I can guarantee would be most. And we have proof of at least one of a little study done by the Salt Lake Tribune this last legislative session, where I think we talked about it too, where Energy Solutions, you know, the radioactive trash company, was donating thousands of dollars to candidate campaigns. And then there was a law that came up this last legislative session that passed easily, and everyone that voted yes, look at their donations,
received
thousands of dollars of funding from Energy Solutions, and those that voted no didn't.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. It's this proof.
No, it's clear as day.
Right there. And they lie and say, oh, no, you know, donations have nothing to do. It's like, no, dude, stop. You're lying.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to be naive to believe that, you know, you're going to receive money, a huge amount of money from said company or said individual, and then do nothing to help them later on.
And why would companies continue to donate that much if they weren't getting anything return, too?
Just out of the grace of their heart. Out of the goodness
of their cold, dead heart.
Absolutely. Yeah. They want to save their soul.
Yep. That's exactly why. So I think that'll be really interesting, and I'll keep talking about that over the next several episodes as I work on that. And it'll be done within about 6 weeks. So in about 6 weeks, we'll have a very, very clear view of who's in trouble. And then if it's really good, I'd really like to release it to the press, and we'll see how that goes.
That'd be interesting.
Reckoning day,
right?
So we're about an hour, so we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with a couple more things. And during the break, you can go to civolacy.org or email us at info@civolacy.org if you've got any questions or would like to ask anything about what we've talked about so far. So we'll be right back. So, let's just finish off with a couple of things. Let's see here. I want to talk a little bit about healthcare and stuff. And So I don't have health care anymore because I turned 26, and
it's the best feeling.
I know. It's so the government decides, oh, if you're 26 and you don't need it,
yeah,
you're invincible. Well, really, the pharmaceutical companies and healthcare industries that don't want to pay crap really for anything.
Well, like you said, the government.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was thinking about that. Obviously, trying to figure out what to do, and yeah, just church found its way into the discussion. So,
okay.
If you don't know, there are church has I think they're over $30 billion of investments. Fine.
Nice.
But they have $1 billion, a little bit more than that, invested in pharmaceutical companies and pharmaceutical companies that have tried to raise opiate usage.
Yeah.
These same companies are very against medical marijuana because obviously it would take away from their money, from their profit.
Right.
So I thought it was interesting that suddenly the church is so interested in trying to stop the medical marijuana thing from going through this year. And, either way, whether it has to do with their involvement with the companies or their values, which isn't a value anyways, it's stupid and doesn't matter. But it's...
Yeah, that's a weird one. I don't know why you'd want to stop medical marijuana. I really don't get that. Because, yeah. I mean, as far as the church's morals go, I mean, we do have the word of wisdom, but the word of wisdom doesn't apply to prescription medication. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's like, the word of wisdom, too, isn't it's not a commandment. Like, in reality, it's not.
That too. But I mean, like, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, like, I could see them being against, like, recreational marijuana, but medical marijuana, I don't see that. That doesn't make sense to me.
And the fact that, like, 10 people die a day in Utah because of opiates, apparently that doesn't matter. But yeah, it's something that kind of made me mad. I think it's something that's not right.
Right.
Again, with church, they shouldn't be involved with pharmaceutical companies or really any companies at all. But especially with these people that are profiting off the lives of others and putting ridiculous prices on medications for no reason, just because they can make more money. And that's not Christ-like at all. Like,
yeah.
Gorging people, poor people, people in need. That doesn't sound right. So that's something.
I love gorging on old people. I know. Poor people.
Poor people.
Just old
and,
people.
Yeah. And basically just, leaving people to die and to suffer and have, and if they have no health care, then, good luck, I guess. Go die is basically what they're saying.
That sounds nice.
So I think there needs to be a really big change in that. These pharmaceutical companies are just complete disgrace to our nation and just horrible what they do and how much they push medications and how much they price them too. And then to come out and say they're so against, some other drug that alleviates pain or whatever, but they're really doing it just because of their own interests of profit is just crazy. So that's not happy about that. And it was funny, too, because the other day my a leader from my area ward came over and just to talk and say hi and whatever. And they were, like, interested in my campaign and everything, and it was funny, and he's a cool person, but our discussion kind of went into politics. He's like, oh, man, I really wish, like, during church I could, give you some time to talk about your campaign, but unfortunately, like, politics is against church policy. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that is unless it has to do with medical marijuana, right? Then you can talk about it all you want on being against it. And it's funny because he was, like, a little shocked, but agreeing. I'm like, yeah, well... There's a lot of double standards, and I just thought it was funny. It's like, oh, yeah, you can't talk, or you shouldn't be talking about your views. But our views, oh, yeah, we're going to shove it down your throat. So I think that was interesting and something something to bring up. And yeah, just again, to think for yourself and about this type of stuff, because, you know, that's where the separation comes again of the stuff that doesn't matter and the stuff that, you know, does. So, you know, voice your opinion and say what you want, because we're in a free nation, and especially in the church, is a church that historically encourages thought and questions and stuff, instead of pushing it down or forcing you to think one way. Historically, it's not that way, although it has become that way, but it needs to change. So yeah, you have anything to say on that one?
No, I mean, you know, kind of just going back to what we were originally talking about as far as investments go, and it really, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, the church is a corporation and corporations invest stuff. And so, okay, you know, whatever. But I mean, it's hard to really, like, you know, when your interests are monetarily in something, mm-hmm. and then suddenly you have a stance against something or for something, and it happens to align with your monetary interests, even if it is a total coincidence, it doesn't look good. Yeah. It never looks good.
And especially that type of business, corporation, or whatever, it's, you're a church. Like, first and foremost, like, decide what you want.
Right.
Are you a church or are you a corporation? You can't be both.
I'm both.
Yeah. So, you know, other corporations stuff, sure, they might have interest in whatever, but yeah, they're a business, they're a corporation, they're going to do that. And it's not always right, but whatever, that's what they do. You're a church is a church. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be completely different. So there shouldn't be this mix of corporate interests and stuff, because in the end, who are you trying to help? The people, or the corporation grow?
Yeah.
Because the church is not a corporation. You know, it's not supposed to, it's not for making profit. It's for helping the souls, right, of people. So they need to realize that and make some huge corrections, because they're acting a lot more like a corporation, wanting the most profit at the end of the day,
right?
And you know, than actually helping people, which is the real goal.
And I know the Mormon Church, they care a lot about image, you know, and this is something that would help their image, you right. know, in the end. And so in the end, it would help them if they stopped, you know, if they stepped back from this corporation sort of feel, this sort of like almost like a business feel,
yeah.
to that more of a church. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think of another church that like operates the same way. I mean, maybe like the Roman Catholic Church, cause they're so big, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? But even then, I mean, like, I don't know. It's tough to say, cause yeah. it really, it comes down to what churches are there for and right. what religion is and what business is.
Right.
And religion is not business, or it shouldn't yeah. be business.
And saving face doesn't mean anything, and it shouldn't. They shouldn't be caring, you know, about their, you know, the name, the good name of the church. Who cares?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. What matters is the individual, and I'm pretty sure that's what, you know, Christ cared about, and you know, biblical figures, they cared about the individual. They didn't care about their image. They didn't care about what people thought about them. That didn't matter. They cared about the individual. And unfortunately, the corporation of the church has cared too much about the image. And even when I was working there, it proves the point. Like, this part, I think, is fine for them to do, but it just adds to the corporation feels that they completely rebranded. Like, and they even have a branding team. So they have a very specific style guide of what colors, what graphics, what font.
Yep.
They can use for everything in the church now.
Oh, wow.
Which is, and they use the example like Coca-Cola. You know, I mean, if you look at a Coke bottle and you take the name away, but you just have like the red and stuff, like you do immediately know, oh, yeah, that's Coke.
Right.
So it's the same thing they're trying to do with the church, which, yeah, I understand.
Or it's brand recognition. Yeah.
But, and sure, that I'm fine with them doing that. But it just adds, but I think that's fallen into every other aspect of the church where it's turned into a company, corporation, right. a brand. you know, and so everything is has turned into that, and the whole personal, the whole reason they're even here has gone away.
Right, and it becomes kind of scarier than that, because, I mean, if you think about it, like, if the church is becoming a company, if they're becoming a business, what is it that they're selling? They're selling salvation. They're selling, yeah. You know what I mean? And yeah. It's like, really? Like, that's something you're selling to people? Yeah. Like, you're trying to make money off of yeah. other people's happiness and other people's, you know. And
missionaries right. then I definitely mean, be seen as door-to-door salesmen.
Right. And it shouldn't be that way. I'm not saying it is that way. But, you know, with the way that the church is being organized lately and the way that it's appearing more as a business, I can totally see how it appears that way, you know, and we don't want people to see it that way. Yeah. Yeah, but the issue is, anytime anybody brings up anything negative about the church, people take it very sensitive, very seriously, yeah. you know, and they're very sensitive to it. And
stop being a snowflake.
Well, we shouldn't be so sensitive to it. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. Obviously, yeah, there are some people that are critical of the church that no matter what, you can't appease yeah. them. They're just critical jerks and
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, there's
you know,
a difference.
Those people can stick it where the sun don't shine. But there are people who have general gripes and grievances with the church that we should at least listen to what they have to say, because yeah. a lot of what they say makes sense.
Yeah. And that's, you know, where we're coming at it. You know, all these, you know, go to church, I'm a Mormon and stuff, but I am not, you know, I'm not afraid to be super critical of the church, at church with leaders and stuff, because it's stuff that needs to be changed.
Yeah.
And I'm just one of those people, especially as a politician, where if I see something wrong, I'm going to go there and speak out and change it.
Right.
Unless they try and stop me. But, that's just kind of, yeah, kind of the person that I am. So,
yeah, you know, no, and yeah. I'm the same way, you know, I am a Mormon as well, and I've been a Mormon my whole life. I have no desire to not be a Mormon. I absolutely love it, but there are things about the Mormon church that I believe should change, because it's not necessarily doctrine things that should change, yeah. it's culture. And
right, yeah, and it has nothing to do with doctrine. Doctrine is, like, so different, and it's, I don't think we even really talked about that, because that's not something that changes right. or nothing that we have a problem with.
No,
it's everything
no,
to do
don't
with
have
the
a
culture
problem with any of the doctrine no yeah. yeah it all has to do with the culture and the way it's run, you know, yeah. The policies, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there's our rant for the day on stuff, and lastly, KSL Classifieds on for free. Mike, I think you should pick this up. There's okay. a free skateboard mini ramp.
Oh, I'm getting it.
So, yeah, that'll be...
That's pretty sweet.
You really should, though.
No, that's
pretty
sweet.
Because I remember when teenagers,
yeah.
we tried to make ramps, and they just never, yeah. they never worked
I'm
out.
I'm so bad at making ramps, yeah. No,
yeah,
that's
that'd
pretty
be
awesome. Where's
get
that
get back
at?
Into skating. Salt Lake. Salt Lake, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a... Yeah, that's about it for today, and hope you guys liked the episode. Again, go to our website, savalsi.org. info@savalsi.org for if you want to email us, and yeah, you can follow me along on my Senate campaign too. That's votecastanio.com, and
feel free to donate too.
Yeah, feel free to donate there, and if you'd like to volunteer, help out on the campaign trail, I'm always out there walking and getting to know people and getting to know the issues. And yeah, so that'll be it for this week.